after we spent a couple $100,000 on building the tech and the mind score. And I was like, dude, what do you guys think? And they're like, yeah, this is cool. Like, you're telling me like my mind score and the biometrics around it, but like, hey, what's this thing over here that you guys just aren't really talking about? This, like, where you have a teammate on it, the swim buddy. And I was like, oh, well, that's just like if you go sideways, like, it's going to send a text alert to your buddy just to check in. And they're like, dude, that's the fucking thing. That's it. Like, that is the thing. Like, human to human interactions, what's missing in 2023 with all this technology around it? You're taking tech, and tech is not the solution. Tech is the tool that allows you to get back to the solution, and that's human to human interaction.
Welcome back, Mops and Mo's team, for another week here with Drew and Alex. We've got a very, very interesting guest this week with a very interesting story, Alex.
We got Jonathan Wilson, who spent 16 years in the military, most of that as a Navy SEAL with multiple deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. When he got out, he got his MBA at the University of Oxford's Business School and transferred into finance as an equity trader for Goldman Sachs, and then moved on to Capital Group. You'll hear a bit about his journey after that in the episode, but the short version is that he didn't find quite the satisfaction in that role that he was necessarily looking for. He co-founded the SEAL Future Foundation in 2012. And then, as we will focus on in this episode, he is the CEO and founder of Envy Mind Health, which was born out of his own struggles with mental health after leaving the service.
I was initially connected with him because of a physical undertaking that he is about to embark on, which he will explain in the episode, as a way of raising awareness for mental health and for suicide. And quite frankly, this was one of those episodes that I think that we both came into thinking that we would discuss a lot around the technology that Envy has within its system. And we went down so many unique rabbit holes around mental health, around suicide awareness. It's a conversation that both Alex and I have wanted to have on this podcast for a really long time, but we both recognize that we are by no means experts in this field. So we'd been looking for the right person. And it really feels like with this episode, we struck gold.
Yeah, it's something we've noticed with plenty of our episodes, but the ones that go kind of off the rails immediately, where we throw the plan out the window, tend to be the most engaging, interesting, unique episodes we have. And I don't know about you, Drew, but for me, I lost track of the plan like within 5 minutes. I don't know what was going on, and it turned out to be fantastic.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, I think we have enjoyed every single one of the guests that we've had on, and every single one of them has brought something interesting to the table. But this was one of those episodes where, like, no shit, we could have kept talking for hours, and we will probably have to readdress quite a few of the things that we bring up. Because like we mentioned, obviously mental health and specifically suicide awareness are massive topics in the military. And again, something that neither you nor I are professionals at, but as soon as this episode was over, we were texting each other saying, like, this is a topic we need to spend more time on. So yeah, I had a lot of fun in this conversation.
Yeah. And we'll hopefully be continuing the conversation both with future episodes and with you guys. So if you have thoughts here, if you have directions you want us to go, all of that we'll be kind of driving it on social media and the podcast a little bit, trying to keep the conversation around how can we make a dent in this problem going. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Enjoy.
I mean, the backstory is the foundation I started out of Goldman. That was initially for the SEAL Future Foundation. That was initially for job placement. And then a suicide on our watch triggered our wellness program, where I told you we started using Whoops to track guys and use it as a mental health indicator. You know, there is, I don't know if we touched on this, when I was running the nonprofit, and I've turned that completely over to focus on Envy, but when I was running that nonprofit, I went to our team and was like, find out what's out there. I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. We're going to explore it. And psychedelics is something that's a hot topic that we've gone deep in. Mm-hmm. We have research with UT Austin, UCSD. UCSF. So University of California, San Francisco. And we've seen some tremendous just work out of that space. So there's that piece if you guys want to tap on that. But I think the ones that you highlighted, the big anchors, are great.
Okay. Well, I mean, since you brought it up, I want to ask about the psychedelics piece, because we've had a couple of folks on now who've gone through sort of the VA system, a lot of conversation around mental health, and obviously in, I mean, I guess you could call it the civilian space, the commercial space, what have you, the psychedelic component of the mental health question is becoming more prevalent. I mean, I know like Johns Hopkins, for example, is a major medical institution that's doing some work on psychedelics. What do you think that that looks like on the DOD, on the VA side? Is there a world where that becomes part of the equation?
Yeah. So Dr. Robert Kaufman, who was, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty confident he was a colonel in the Air Force. He works at Walter Reed. He's a huge supporter of psychedelics. He's advocated for on Capitol Hill. He's a close friend of ours. And what they're pushing for is psychedelics in active duty.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's actually some bills that have been passed in some of the states. You've probably seen those. Some of my former colleagues, Dan Crunch, Sean, other, have introduced those bills. It was actually bipartisan. So you had both sides of the House there pushing for this bill for veterans specifically to gain access as a veteran to psychedelics. But then there's this contingent, the same group pushing for it in the active force as well. So there's laws, there's bills being pushed. My wife and I have actually spoken on a few of the state Capitol Hills in Connecticut, where it was approved, and then Colorado as well. And Colorado's decrimmed it. Oregon's got, you know, it's legalized it. There's a certain system that you have to go through to gain access to psilocybin specifically, but it's happening. Like, so it's unfolding, and who's leading the way is the veteran community, because I mean, a lot of the tools and resources were archaic, the system's slow, and really didn't know how to address, in our opinion, some of the symptoms that we had coming out of wars. It's like, oh shit, TBI, here's antidepressant, TBI, here's an SSRI. And that wasn't quite the solution that we needed. So yeah, that's kind of what we're seeing currently.
And I mean, by no means do I want to make this a podcast specifically on psychedelics, but I do have a question, because I think it relates to the same sort of conversations that you hear in human performance circles around performance enhancing drugs. And, you know, if your life is on the line in combat, why not have everything available to you? And the easy follow on is like, well, people are going to abuse that type of thing. So I guess that my question is around psychedelics, and I don't know anything at all about psychedelics, so feel free to shoot that one down. But like, how do you account for the fact that there would inevitably be a certain population that takes it to the extreme, takes it too far? And I feel like that's the resistance that you probably experience when you put these sort of conversations forward.
Yeah. Well, let me just kind of state, most of the ones that we're gravitating towards, Ibogaine, ayahuasca, I've done Ibogaine, and I'll share some of my own personal experience if we go down that path, but Ibogaine is not a fucking recreational drug. Nobody's going to do this recreationally. I promise you that. It is hard. The experience, really, it's fascinating. It was my first introduction like 5 years ago into the psychedelic space. And my quick story on that was I tried everything. As mentioned, I was at Goldman Sachs after I was a SEAL. Everything was supposedly going good. And yet inside, I was kind of withering away, not understanding PTSD, not understanding TBI, missing my tribe, missing my purpose, and started going to the VA. The VA was just taxed. It's a monster of a machine, and it was overwhelmed, and just really couldn't gain me the resources or an understanding of who I was, but gave me the resources that I needed. When I did gain access to it, it just wasn't working. I started going on my own to some of the nonprofits, exploring at our own nonprofit magnetic stimulation and some of these other modalities, which would give temporary fixes, like hyperbaric chamber, a temporary fix, but then inevitably you're back to where you're at. And you get to a spot where a lot of these veterans, myself included, were just like, what do I have to lose? Like, you know, like, why wouldn't I try this? Despite the fact that our whole lives were trained, like, you know, since we were kids, dared, you know, we're not doing drugs. You got the old scrambled eggs in the pan, and Yep. Go in the military, zero tolerance from the Clinton era. So like I was not one to like go out there and do drugs. And I classify this as drugs. In my opinion, this is a medicine. And going back to Ibogaine, it's not recreational. It was not an easy experience for me. One of the most beneficial things I've ever done in my life, and gave me perspective. That's what I always say about these medicines. It gives you a different angle. When before you thought the world was fucked up, now you get a different perspective and realize like, oh, wait a second. This is me. These are my decisions. This is how I react. And you start thinking about things just differently enough to start creating new behaviors and patterns. And that's what it allowed me to do. So just to kind of address your point there, like most of these are not recreational, but there's a huge but there. Like we know the military community. We know some of these type A's in the different organizations that I was a part of and others, and somehow, some way they'll find a way to abuse them. So there has to, I think that's what's slowing this down, is like, we're being thoughtful about this. Is this a tool that can be used in the active force? Maybe not. Maybe it is only veterans. And if it is, what's the system where we gain access to it? Because inevitably somebody's probably going to figure out a way to abuse something. It won't be me. I promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
As Drew asked that question, it got me thinking a little bit, because that's the classic one of like, has potential for abuse and things like that. But yeah. I've read a bunch of Michael Pollan, which it sounds like you've probably read some of his work too. But the double standard of like which things we treat as drugs and which things we treat as like okay and leave it to personal responsibility. Like if we look at like abuse level use of alcohol and caffeine across the military and the amount of damage that's doing to people. And then we don't even like, we won't let active duty service members even use like CBD and things like that, when like the potential for abuse is like largely non-existent and the potential benefits are huge. I just don't understand where we draw these lines. And it mostly comes back to like history and who was in power at the right time to set the laws and things like that. But I mean, you start reading even a little bit of Michael Pollan and you start to hate the DEA real fast. And it gets really frustrating of like how we're so okay with like, and we'll eventually do an episode on it for this podcast, but how hard we market alcohol towards service members on our own installations, knowing that there is a huge problem with alcohol, is astonishing. Yeah. And yet we won't have conversations about any of these other substances because they're drugs and alcohol is not.
Yeah. Well, what was going on in my head was just preach, brother. Like, amen. And it's so true, dude. It's like, again, I go back to pre-psychedelic experience for me. Like, I didn't have a drinking problem. Dude, everybody has a drinking problem in the military. Like everybody is alcoholic. We just couldn't admit it. Or it was culturally, it was the norm. Like, hey, you go out on a work trip and you're going to burn it down to 3 a.m. And it's a token, like it's a badge of honor to wake up at 6, get PT in before you go hit the range. And then you do it again, right? And rinse and repeat. I didn't realize until I got out of that experience. And I came out of that, man. And it's been 5 years. I've probably drank 3 or 4 times in 5 years. And every time I do it, it's just like, I'm in a situation where I was like, maybe I'll just have one. And I haven't. And it tastes like poison. Mm. And it is poison. It really does to me.
It literally is.
Judgment on people that drink. I don't care. I'm just sharing like from my experience of doing Ibogaine, I recognize quickly, like, this is a huge problem for me. You know, by the way, I love my life now. I wake up early. I get a run in. I get a workout in. I'm there for the kids. There's no hangovers. I'm old now. I'm in my mid 40s. Like the hangovers aren't like when we were young bucks where we get up and like we still crush a day at work. Now I need a whole day off just to recover. So like, no, thank you. Why would I do that? I got too much. There's too much to do in this world, right? Like get in a hike, build a business, like help your children, like throw a baseball. Like it's never ending. And for me, I recognize alcohol was inhibiting and slowing all that down. And I couldn't make that trade off anymore.
Do you think, I mean, you've been to some of the sort of, you know, top corners of the military throughout your career. Do you think that changes? Do you think that culture changes on the active duty side? Because I know we've talked to a couple of veterans from various units that have done various things, and they all seem to echo what you're saying. And granted, we may have a little bit of bias with who we reach out to, but by that same token, it seems like there's a very different conversation being had on the, hey man, been there, done that. Not really the road I want to go down, versus when you're in it, it's like you mentioned, it's a work trip. Like, do you think that culture changes over time, or what does that look like to you?
Yeah, I think the baseline for the community is in a better position. I still think like platoon, troop, squadron dependent is going to dictate the culture, and that culture is going to dictate, like, are guys still burning it down? Are they still drinking? And but overall, I think with the help of the human performance team, like when I first showed up in the early 2000s, like you walk into SEAL Team 4 and it was all metal plates. It was lift as much as you effing can. And by the time, and I'm not that big, I'm 6 foot. So by the time I went on my first deployment, I was 230 pounds of just like straight, like I was a muscle and I couldn't sprint. Like that was, we had no human performance team. We had no strength and conditioning coach. We were doing like lift as much as you could. We've come a long way. And I think with that, like with the mind gym on the SEAL bases now, we got some nutritionists. Like we poach some of the best people out there. We absolutely recognize now what alcohol is and how it inhibits and slows down like our overall goals and success that we're trying to achieve. And then just starting to realize just through like biometric feedback, like, oh, you have one freaking shot, one glass of wine, one beer. It takes you 4 days to get back to baseline. Like the data doesn't lie. I mean, that you can pull that off the internet. So mm-hmm. now you're like, okay, I'm trying to perform at the most elite level and I'm burning it down. Like, is that the best thing for the mission? And we always talk about mission first, team, teammate self. Like, what if something happens on that mission after we burned it down, like on an off day, somebody got hurt and I was in the room with them. You start thinking about all these things. So I think it's shifting with all those things that I've kind of called out with just the support that's come in, an understanding of like what's good and what's not, a real good understanding of our biometrics and nutrition. I still think like we're in the teams, we're in the military. Mm-hmm. Like there's still going to be some of that, right? Like, and it's going to be cultural dependent. I was on a team where none of us drank. We just all like this, that was 10 years ago. Like we were just too into our, like nutrition and working out and like trying to be the best version that we could. That was 10 years ago. So I can't even imagine where they're at today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned being 6 foot 230 and now with Envy, you're, and I wrote this down, the Monster Mash.
Yeah.
1 mile. So jump in, 10 mile swim, 200 mile run.
Yeah. I'm not 230 now.
Well, I was going to say, can you explain how you went from there to now here?
Yeah. So the backstory there is I left the teams and didn't know how to transition. The hardest thing I've ever done wasn't war. It wasn't like burying friends. It wasn't the funerals. It was honestly that transition. It brought me to my knees. I kind of shared that with you guys. Like you're not with your team anymore. You don't know how you fit in. You don't know how your skills translate. And now you're wearing a suit to work and sitting on a subway 2 hours one way. Like it crushed my soul. From that experience, we started the SEAL Future Foundation to help SEALs find their next purpose, find a job. And in 2017, we lost our first team guy to a suicide. And today I've lost more brothers to suicide than I have to war. It blows my mind because at one point we thought we were agnostic to this. This doesn't pertain to the SEALs. You know, I've lost my first boss, Mike Day. I don't know if you heard his story, but on my first deployment, he was shot 27 times. He took his life earlier this year. We lost a commanding officer, an active duty commanding officer on the West Coast late last year, and two other guys earlier this year. So it's just, it's a real issue. So to answer your question, at the nonprofit SEAL Future Foundation, we threw a Whoop on every single guy and we track biometrics, and Whoop's not intended to be used that way. But if you look at sleep, if you look at heart rate variability, if you look at heart rate, you can quickly tell like something's off, right? If you're not getting sleep, why aren't you getting sleep? Why are you going to bed at 4 a.m. and then waking up at 5? Something's awry. So we had the dashboard and we looked at the guys, and guys that were in the red, our SOP was to reach out and we would check in on these guys. And sometimes it was nothing, sometimes it was something. And guys have told us that, like some guys even said they're here today because we just picked the phone and called them. The other interesting thing that that did was it allowed us to measure the efficacy of the different modalities, the different tools, the different resources that we were using in our practice. So not just medicine, like if you take a medicine and you look at your watch, you can see how that impacts you. And over time, what's the long-term impact? But you can do that with talk therapy. You can do that with an ice bath. You can do that with running. You can measure anything. And we started doing that and quickly realized like, holy shit, medicine's personal. It's personalized. What works for you doesn't work for me, doesn't work for Alex. Like, And that's where I was stunned. I was like, dude, I don't get it. Like, I hop in my truck every day and there's something wrong. Engine light's on. Like, I got to fill the washer fluid. It tells me instantaneously, you're fucked up. And yet something's wrong with me and I know it. I can't put my finger on it. How are we in 2023 and we can't put our finger on what's wrong? And yet we have all this technology around that. So I'm not a tech guy, obviously. I went back to grad school and went to Oxford overseas. Their MBA program is an incubator program. We worked on building the tech for 2 years with Oxford, the classmates, the professors. And then last year we launched INVI, which stands for Invisible Visible. And it's an agnostic software company. We don't care what wearable you have. We pull biometric information from that and we give you your mind score, the biometrics that make up your mental well-being, the trend lines around it. And then in time, our goal is to start personalizing that medicine, like I talked about. Like, we're going to start measuring what you're doing and tell you what works for you. So, long wind of way getting to your question is like, well, how did we get to this race? It's awareness, man.
Mm-hmm.
In 2018, we did something similar. Whoop sponsored it. It was a hell of a lot easier and in a better location. We skydived into San Diego. I effed up the currents and I had no fins. So the hardest swim I've ever done in my life was that swim because I'm an idiot, but that's for a different story. I come out of that 2 mile ocean swim and we rinse off and then we run 100 miles with plates, me and two other SEALs. And the money that we raised went to suicide prevention. And, you know, we're sitting around with now INVI wondering what we can do. And we have 9 people total doing it, mostly team guys. We have a Green Beret. We have a 2-time Stanley Cup winner, NHL guy, because he lost a mentor and a lot of his brothers suffer from CTE. So he's running this with us. And you get all these guys in a room, you say, hey, what can you do? The numbers started increasing fast. And then we had to draw the line. It's like, okay, 10 miles, let's stop. So somehow we ended on a skydive into Montana, into the water. It's 45 degree average water temp. We're going to swim 10 miles nonstop, get out, rewarm, and then run 200 miles with our body armor nonstop. And we're going to end in Sheridan, Wyoming. They're going to shut down that cowboy town and we're going to have a big auction dinner, you know, auction off some great things. And all the proceeds are going to go to UT Austin, who's doing brain research for our communities and other communities.
So you said a few things there that echo conversations I've heard around the human performance space for a while. And both of these, I have to anonymize them because I can't speak for either the person or the organization. But one, I have a close friend. He'll come on this podcast in a year when his probationary period as a federal civilian runs out. But
yeah,
can't really speak too openly until that's done. But talking about how, like, if you look at the dashboard of a 50-year-old airplane, you have like a great understanding of everything that's going well, everything that's wrong, if you're in the right zone, if it's trending the wrong way, all that stuff. And I think that's kind of the holy grail in the biometrics space, especially for the military, is creating something where we can at least superficially track those kind of things for humans. And I do think it's not quite that straightforward, right? Because humans are different than machines and we can't expect our soldiers to start behaving like our trucks. And that's just not the way it's going to be. But I can say
Ferraris, bro. Soldiers are Ferraris.
Yeah. Ferrari.
you talked about putting whoops on people and suddenly getting insight into mental health kind of stuff. And there, again, I got to keep it anonymous because I can't speak for the program, but there has been an example of that with like soldiers in combat, right? There was a study going on where they were tracking soldier sleep and they like one soldier busted through the low end of a threshold and how much sleep they were getting every night. Guy who's monitoring it calls the unit. Unit sends the chaplain to go find the soldier.
Oh, I've heard this story.
They find out that the soldier's going through a crisis back home that none of his leadership knew about. And he was hitting the edge of what he could tolerate. And nobody knew. Nobody in his immediate leadership knew. Yeah. And the reason they detected it was because of watching trends in sleep behavior.
Yep.
I don't know what the secret is to the whole thing. I'm a little bit of a wearable skeptic to a certain degree, but there's something there.
But if you think about it, though, with the wearables and kind of like, Jonathan, what you were mentioning, like, there's really no downside to, you know, the data could be as wonky as you want it to be, but if a guy's showing red, regardless of how accurate it might be, if you reach out to him and he's fine, great, you still reached out to him. if you reached out to him and he's not fine, awesome. Like, you know, best case scenario. So I guess the conversation around wearables and performance to me is one thing, because you have commanders making decisions based on dashboards with like proprietary stuff that just doesn't make any sense. But I think in your case, and I want to get into a question here in a second with this, but like what you guys are looking to do with Envy, to me, it's like, there's really no downside to it because, you know, quote unquote, worst case scenario, you just have a call with a buddy and you check in and everything's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think both of you bring up super valid points, but let me be crystal clear. We are Ferraris. All right, Alex, I just want to be, no, I'm just kidding. I'm a Tacoma, by the way.
You ever seen Max Verstappen? That's what I am. Formula yeah. One, baby.
Yeah. I'm a Tacoma. Who am I kidding? But no, I think both valid points. And, you know, that's been one of the biggest challenges is like, how do you, one, garner the trust of this community? Because we're super skeptical. Wearables, data collection, like, oh my God, like guys, privacy. My best friend, privacy. Like I've had to jump through hoops. We built everything in Texas. I was like, okay, what one state could we build this in where people would be like, okay, maybe I will get behind this. Like, okay, we're going to do it in Texas. Now, albeit it's in Austin, Texas. So that's more, I don't share it's in Austin, but nevertheless, it's still Texas. We've had to jump through a lot of hoops with this. And we're constantly going to the community and asking their feedback, but that's been their biggest thing is like privacy. I don't want my information out there. I don't want you to sell my information. That's not what this is, guys. This honestly is like, we've lost too many people to suicide. Too many of us are struggling in silence, like, because that's what we've been trained to do. The old, adage, suffer in silence. Like that's been beat into me. And that's what causes somebody's suicide. Too many of us don't know what our best friends are going through right now. To your point earlier with that soldier, right? Like, how do we not know that? Like, we're living in the same barracks on a deployment with that guy, and we don't know that. Like, that's the norm because that's what's been taught to us. So, like, if we can find, and I don't quite know how to do this yet, we're learning. How we've solved this is peer-to-peer, like swim buddy is what we call it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's start with our peers. Like, because if we give this to leadership, holy shit, this game is over. Like, I recognize that. There's a right way to do this, and maybe it is the human performance office, right? Like maybe it is, that's how we get this, because there's trust there from the soldiers and the sailors. Like, okay, my performance team is going to check in on me. It's mental resiliency, not mental health. Like they're going to come to me and they're going to start talking to me like what's going on. But the second we address like, hey, we have a dashboard and we can give this to your leadership, people turned off. Like, I don't want any part of this. And all great points. I do want to be clear. We're not selling data. Like we'll figure out a way to monetize or make money. I don't know how to do it yet. Like we put close to $800,000 of investor dollars straight into the tech, into building the tech. So this is real. It's got AI, ML, machine learning components to it. And we worked with doctors for over a year. I mentioned Robert Kaufman. He's actually a psychiatrist at Walter Reed. He helped us amongst other doctors. Chris Free, who's written tons of papers on Army suicides. He helped us weight the different variables as well. And then we just sat there and we just ran this against data sets. How accurate is this? It's not accurate at all. How accurate is it now? Not accurate at all. And to your point, we're not close to where we need to be. We're getting there. Right now, there's false positives. Like, hey, you know, guy just got pinged. He reaches out. No, this doesn't work, man. Like, it's okay, cool. Like what happened? What we're finding is there's a delay when these start showing. So guys are like, no, I'm good. And then 48 hours later is when it's starting to happen. Like they start. So there's a predictive component to this now that we didn't even realize. We're catching it before it happens. So we're early stage again, and we're learning as we go. We got way smarter people than me. With the data analysts and the tech team, but also with doctors really helping us refine this. And the end goal, again, is to keep people on this earth, to help us improve our mental well-being and to optimize our mental wellness. So we're going to keep marching forward with that.
So I know Drew wants to ask you a little bit more about that swim buddy system before we go there though. You mentioned Chris Free, and I don't know if you've read Dan Gade's book, Wounding Warriors, but we brought Dan on to have a conversation on the podcast a couple months ago, and he cites Chris's work heavily throughout that book. And I'm just kind of curious. I haven't actually talked to Chris, and maybe I should just get in touch with him and try and bring him on the show. But Chris has been fairly overtly critical of a lot of the ways the VA handles a lot of issues, particularly when it comes to like disability ratings and incentivizing staying broken and things like that. Their approach to PTSD treatment and all that stuff. So I'd love to just kind of hear more about your work with Chris, because I think it paints a clear picture that Chris is not critical of the VA from a standpoint of like hating the VA or wanting to burn it down or anything. He's critical from a standpoint of wanting to make the system better. And yeah, I think that's where criticism should come from.
Yeah, 1,000%. He's, so Chris is on the board of the foundation I started, Seal Future Foundation. He's also an advisor to Envy Mind Health, and we've become close friends over the years. To your point, he just wants to improve the system. That's it. Bottom line, like, buck stops there. And when you start becoming critical or identifying gaps, there's a huge target that's put on your back. And I think we've all seen that. It doesn't dismiss the work that he's done, and it's highly accurate. You can read it. The operator syndrome, it's like spot on. He's doing it with firefighters now. There was just a, I can send you the link afterwards. He just shared it with me. There's a news, I think it was out of San Diego or California, where they just did a piece on firefighter syndrome. So pretty similar. There's a firefighter that I reached out. I was like, wait a second, I read this operator syndrome paper that you wrote, and there's a lot of similarities of firefighters. Like, can we have some conversations? And they worked for years and quickly identify there's tons of similarities between operator syndrome, and I might be misquoting this firefighter syndrome as well. But Chris, you know, once a week, every Thursday, that team would get together. It was those two and a few other doctors, and they would just sit there, and it's like, okay, what's important here? Let's go back to our research. Let's identify heart rate variability. What's the research out there? Any synergies between that, depression, anxiety, suicide ideation? And we would just sit there and look at everything, and then they would just rank and stack. Let's make this heavily more heavily weighted than the other. So that's how Chris has supported us and continues to support us. He's been a huge advocate of the SEAL Future Foundation and then Envy, particularly this last year.
So I got to ask, because you brought up operator syndrome, and that's something I thought about a lot. And for the audience who haven't like read or listened to stuff about it, as I understand it, operator syndrome is basically referring to the high allostatic load phenomenon, which is basically you're introducing so many and so different stressors all the time that people are in a constant state of not quite being able to recover from it in a consistent way. And you can see how that would affect special operators. You can see how it would affect firefighters. Anybody who's in a high op tempo environment where they're getting exposed to unpredictable stressors is going to run into issues with something like high allostatic load, where they're struggling to adapt to all the stress that's being put on them. The question I have is that everybody seems to want to come up with something we can add to solve that problem. We can add new tech, we can add new training, whatever, whatever. It seems like in a game of managing stress, we should be looking at what we can take away to help manage it. Like, nobody seems to be willing to have a conversation about maybe the op tempo is not sustainable.
You know, we've actually been talking a lot about, not specifically this, but when do we introduce like these topics, these solutions, like to the operators, like the people, like where we're landing. And it's not just operators. Let's like, it's like a society as a whole. It's probably the youth starts needing to be, you know, having some of these techniques talk to them. But I think you're spot on. Like, when do we introduce it to them? It's like probably before they're even operators, right? When do we make these changes? When do we address this? But the reality is can we? Like, does the mission dictate that they have to operate at this level? I have no idea. I haven't spent too much time on this topic. Yeah.
It's $1 million question. If you can answer it, you're yeah.
Yeah. $1 billion now.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do mean, the same phenomenon with the Army right now. Like, we wrapped up two different wars that were going on at the same time. Yeah. And despite the fact that we're not fighting those wars, soldiers are still deployed more now than they were during those wars.
People don't realize that.
Nobody's having that conversation. Like, the stress level, the things that cause it are still there and they're still increasing.
Oh, yeah. Again, like, spot on. And like, I mean, there's so many different variables in this. It's like, probably the biggest, in my opinion, is media. Like, and I don't know if we have time to dive into this, but like,
all the time you need.
Dude, like, people have no idea what's going on overseas right now. They're being told one thing, and honest to God, it's not the truth. This isn't what's really happening. To your point, there's people deployed overseas right now, like more so than they were prior to this, you know, this Afghanistan pullout. And it's what is the thing that will get the attention of the American people and support our business model and support our politicians? Like, I don't know. I live in Colorado right now on a 5-acre farm. And like, I find myself wanting to at times hole up in a 50-acre farm somewhere in the mountains where nobody gains access. It starts to make sense to me. I was like, why would people run off and do that? Yeah. Yeah. Like, and at the same time, I struggle with that though. Yeah.
I am so far out of my depth with this point that's coming to my mind right now, but I'm curious to see
Send
where you
it.
Guys go with this. But, you know, Alex knows this. I'm a huge, you know, war history buff. And I think about World War II in this context. Conflict, 4 years, done, dusted,
yeah,
guys
yeah.
sail back home. I mean, certainly there's issues with PTSD and everything like that, but you don't hear about it as much. And somebody out there, I'm sure, is going to tell me, well, because it's not as well researched. Okay, fair enough. But certainly there's something to be said about the fact that that particular generation came back into a society that allowed them to decompress and sort of get on with things. And you just mentioned sort of the state of affairs these days, constant warfare, constant tension. It's really no surprise that we see this massive uptick in mental health incidences, because if you always have to be turned on and you are not allowed to be turned off, you know, everything's going to trickle downhill. You mentioned politicians and media and all that. They're playing these games at their level, but it's the guys that are at the ground level that are constantly having to be in this state of fight or flight, heightened awareness. It's just no surprise to me that that's where we're at. And again, so far out of my depth here, but it's curious that as we've trended towards this state of constant warfare, we're also dealing with this crisis of like constant mental health issues.
So I've mentioned a couple books. I'm going to mention another one now that if you're curious about the stuff Drew's talking about, you got to go read Tribe by Sebastian Younger. But
Sebastian and I are really good friends. I helped him write that book.
Of course.
That's where my point came from. Yeah.
So I think, I mean, I'm sure John is going to answer this question way better than I can, but there's an element of during World War II, America went to war as a society and it returned from war as a society, where that was like the cultural dynamic. And once you transition to an all-volunteer force that's off fighting wars for decades at a time, that the society
full-time
doesn't
job.
Really feel, and it becomes a family business where most of the people in service are like one degree removed from a relative who was in service and insulated from the rest of society. Like, America didn't go to war for Afghanistan. The military did, but America didn't. Mm-hmm. And this comes back to like, and I'll leave this to John to take it from here. But when I think about the term suicide prevention, I don't know what that means, because I want to think about what we do, not what we prevent. So rather than thinking about suicide prevention, I think about sense of purpose enhancement and like community building, relationship building, those kinds of things. And those aren't technically suicide prevention, but I think they will reduce suicide if done right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the nonprofit that we started, I mentioned it was to help these men find their next purpose. That's what we realized. And we have a couple different, I mean, the mission is purpose so they can continue to serve in their communities. We have tons of t-shirts to say purpose, passion, team, like the three critical components or pillars that we feel are necessary for people to make that successful transition. But Drew, I think your point of like sustained combat and now let's go ahead and heal, let's go ahead and address these, let's go ahead and get back to work and like build this country now that the wars are over, was why we built the nonprofit. There was nothing. The war kept going. Like, we were just like, you know, like the folks that were falling out and injured, killed, retired, and there was no parade, there was nothing. It was just like, here's your DD-214, go figure it out. And again, post-World War II, from my understanding, and what I was a history undergrad too. I started off aerospace and 2 weeks later quickly realized I'm not going to fucking hack aerospace. My true passion is history too. From what I understand, it was just that. It was just like, hey, the society got around these members that served, the society that went to war, and those that couldn't still supported how they could. And then they helped everybody get back and acclimate in their communities. There was none of it. Like, it's people are trying, but the war kept going on. The machine kept going. People were making millions, trillions, billions of dollars off of war. So how could it stop, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, and that, I mean, right there, that point that you just mentioned, that, you know, society just effectively people kind of wrapping their arms around the problem. And Alex mentioned this a while back, because when Jonathan, when you and I first spoke about Envy, I think the piece of the technology that stuck out to me the most was the Swim Buddy system, because having been around human performance for a long time, tech is a very individualized thing. Like it in fact makes its money on the concept of the quantified self, and let's find these numbers out for you and you can act on it. And what you guys have created is this idea of, let's have some of your sort of trusted, you know, friends involved in that piece. Let's have them see your data. Let's have them be able to respond to that. And you create this network of support. And I'm just curious to hear the narrative behind that, because I think that alone is one, unique, but then two, just incredibly powerful.
Yeah. So people are trying to help. So I'm not bashing anybody's efforts. From what we've seen in our community, the solutions that were in front of us were just falling short. So you go to like, hey, what's suicide prevention? It's a dialing a number. If you're in a spot where you can, I just have a hard time because I've known a lot of people that just didn't have the courage, were in too dark of a place to pick up a phone. Like, how do you get to them before they isolate? How do you get to them before they pull that trigger? That's where we just took a step back. And it wasn't us. We did, we interviewed after we spent a couple hundred thousand dollars on building the tech and the mind score. And I was like, dude, what do you guys think? And they're like, yeah, this is cool. Like, you're telling me like my mind score and the biometrics around it. But like, hey, what's this thing over here that you guys just aren't really talking about, this like where you have a teammate on it, the swim buddy? And I was like, oh, well, that's just like, if you go sideways, like, you know, it's going to send a text alert to your buddy just to check in. And they're like, dude, that's the fucking thing. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, that is the thing. Like, human to human interactions, what's missing in 2023 with all this technology around it. You're taking tech, and tech is not the solution. Tech is the tool that allows you to get back to the solution. And that's human to human interaction. And I just sat there stunned. I was like, oh my God, we spent $700,000+ building this fucking mind score. But it's part of the system, and it's what triggers that alert. But that is it, man. Like, I can't tell you how many times, I think we interviewed 93 on this one specific, we sat down and we had a team come in and they asked tons of questions, and almost all of them, I think it was like 96%, something crazy, all said that the number one solution there is that human to human component. It's a swim buddy. Like, I wouldn't do this for me. That's mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many quotes these dudes written, because we asked for quotes as well. I won't, this isn't for me, or I wouldn't do this for me. But if you're telling me, if I sign up for my buddy, oh fuck, I'm all over it. I'll do this for him all day, or her all day long. And that's where I was like, oh my God, I missed the mark. I was in the teams, and I quickly forgot like how we got through every challenging situation was with our teammates. So it's the one thing that is keeping this, if I'm being completely transparent with you, is like, as we're trying to figure out the mind scores, or trying to figure out like the solutions and get the algorithm to spit out the solutions that work best for you, the thing that is holding this whole thing together and what is working today is a swim buddy component. It's actively working. We have texts where guys shared is like, this dude was fucked up, and they allowed us, they sent us screenshots of their text, and it's just like, hey man, are you good? It's like, yeah, I'm good. I was like, well, your mind, I just got an alert, something about your mind score is down 20%, or, you know, are you sure? It's like, well, no, you know, I got some shit going on. You got a few minutes. I'm like, oh my God, it's working. So yeah, that's the one thing, man, right now is a swim buddy. And I think we're just going to put all our energy and resources into refining that and then building out the ancillary projects from there.
Well, okay. So I got to ask, because another topic that we hit on quite a bit with various guests is the return on investment when it comes to human performance. And what you just mentioned is the arguably sort of the softer quote unquote side of the tech is the more powerful piece. But I'm envisioning myself sitting in a room with the purse strings, and they're saying, we want to see the quantifiable data. We want to see the mind score. If that piece, you know, if we can't hold that up next to X, Y, and Z, we're not going to purchase this software, blah, 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 blah. So how do you take that component, the swim buddy piece, the phone call to the friend, you know, Alex mentioned, how do you quantify like suicide prevention? How do you translate that in such a way that somebody who is only looking at dollars and cents can say, yeah, you know what, that makes sense? Because I think the big picture for Mops and Mos is getting at the heart of what really matters in human performance. And to me, it seems like with the swim buddy thing, you guys are kind of right there. You're flirting with it, but I see the challenges in trying to translate that into a system that only operates on X's and O's and stoplight charts. So how do you make sense of those two things?
Yeah, it's been, you know, I was just joking. There's an potential investor in Idaho, Idaho that I have to go in Sun Valley, Idaho, that I have to go see in a couple of weeks. And I was joking with, I call him the handler, because there's always a handler for billionaires. Like, you don't gain access to the billionaire. You get the handler kind of courts you. And then if you're, you know, then you potentially you can sit in front of this billionaire. But we were both talking about this. Is like, I can't tell you how many times, like, we're literally, and it's early stage, but we're helping people. I don't know if we've saved lives yet, but we are absolutely averting some, you know, situations that don't need to happen or unfold, or people don't need to go that far dark. So we're averting those. And these VCs and these folks are like, what does that mean? Like, what's the bottom line here? Like, I'm just like, how do you build like a company that is trying to help people, like humans, and at the same time get the resources, the money, the investment to build it, knowing that they will only give you that investment, is kind of how I'm translating what you're saying, if they get a huge return on it. So I don't quite know, man. We've explored a few options. One is, like, I am a disabled veteran. There's this remote patient monitoring piece that we're exploring. So a lot of veterans, and I just kind of admitted I wouldn't mind being one of them, isolate themselves way off in the woods or in the mountains, far away from VAs. So telehealth right now is prominent. And we have the ability with our technology to capture timestamps when a doctor is doing a telehealth. So we have a telehealth platform. So we're trying to think, like, how do we get paid while we still stay true to our mission of saving people's lives and helping people through the human-to-human connection? So that's one avenue we're exploring. It's not fun. It's not like we're working with the VA and insurance companies, but we're, you know, at the end of the day, we're just trying to figure out how to get paid. And the other one is, like, big contracts with the government too. If, like, municipalities, fire stations, like, okay, if we come in and we train through our experience, mental resiliency, some of the tools that we've used, breath work, mindfulness, meditation, and we show the data of you improving or the biometrics improving from that, I think that is something that's been interesting for us too, and more aligned with our business model. So going into firehouses and be like, hey, let's sit down. We're going to give you the mind score and the tools, but at the same time, we're going to give you the solutions that will improve those, be it breath work, box breathing, or whatever it is. So I don't quite know yet, man. One of the hardest things that I've done, it wasn't Hell Week, wasn't war. It's like starting a business in a recession.
So yeah. Something that clicked there for me, and I'm noticing a lot of parallel lessons and things like that, right? But I've done a bunch of work with Team Red, White, and Blue. We've talked about it on this podcast before. I'm sure everybody's seen the
also
the
lives on a farm
with the Eagles. Yeah, another veteran living on a farm farther away from people. But before I joined RWB, in the very earliest days of it, they had imagined it a little bit differently. And part of the idea is that they would pair veterans who needed help with veterans who wanted to help. And guess which one people signed up for and which one they didn't, right? Nobody signed up for "I need help." Everybody signed up for "I want to help."
Is that amazing?
Yeah. Right. And there's something there about, like, leveraging that piece of human nature and that piece of, like, the veteran cultural dynamic and stuff. Like, they had to reshape the whole, like, basically what Team RWB does now is they create opportunities for, like, finding leadership work and sense of purpose to help other people. There is no join us to get something. That just doesn't exist in your organization. And I think that's, like, spreading to other veteran organizations, realizing that it is all about that sense of purpose and realizing it is all about showing people that they can still help other people. I mean, it comes back to Drew's question. That's a hard thing to put on a graph or a PowerPoint slide, but I think anybody who's experienced it gets it. That's where the secret sauce is not in the data, is not in the dashboard. It's in sense of purpose and human connection.
Yeah. I mean, what greater purpose is there to help somebody realize the potential that they have, right? Like, give them, like, the course corrections or show them where they can move forward. I was like, absolutely. And you know, I'm tracking your work. I'm tracking what those Red, White, and Blues doing. It's awesome to see that. You know, one of the other things I'll just share a little bit about Envy. One of the other reasons why we started was we recognized a lot of these nonprofits, not Red, White, and Blue, but other ones where you go inpatient, the veterans or the firefighters, first responders are thriving. They get the resources, they get attention, they go there for 2-3 weeks, and then they go home back to the chaos that life is, the bills, the marriage that they don't know how to communicate, the children. And that's where a lot of this damage and, you know, self-harm was happening. So another thing, we're talking to home base, it's not finalized, but twofold. One, we'll capture through Envy, the technology, the different treatments that they're prescribing their patients while they're there to see what's working for them, what's not. So that's cool data. That's cool. That's really interesting. That's one way for us to get paid. But more importantly, one way for them to better understand how to treat their patient population. But where I'm really excited is post, you know, that retreat, post that inpatient, they go away. Now they can sit there and still support those veterans, first responders, LE, and really understand that's when self-harm happens. Like now we can catch it prior to it happening, because we're seeing it not just with home base, like all these nonprofits, ours included. We would send them away to a retreat and everything's great. They come home and chaos ensues. How do we stop that chaos from happening? And we think the technology is there. So that's another area.
Speaking of the tech, and I mean, you don't, by no means do you need to, like, you know, show how the sausage is made or reveal anything proprietary, but I'm curious because you're tracking a lot of different biometrics and it's creating a lot of signal. And we talked about that with the Swim Buddy system. Yeah. And given the kind of high level of expertise that you guys have around this technology, what are, and maybe to cage it in like a, you know, buzzwordy way, what are sort of the top three metrics that you guys look at to trigger what you would consider to be like a red flag, you know, sleep, check-ins, what have you?
Yeah, it's, I already threw them out there. So it's heart rate variability, it's heart rate, and it's sleep. And then there's one other, it's activity. So it's what you're doing day to day, what's your physical regimen. Those are what we pull from the wearables. So our algorithm API to those different wearables, Oura Ring, Garmin watch, we capture 70 some odd percent of the market for this demographic that we're initially targeting. And again, we want to get to adolescents. There's so much bullying taking place on social media. Like son, who's he's a freshman in college now, but when COVID happened, he got crushed and, you know, we were sleeping outside of his door. Like he went from thriving as a football player to now, like most kids and like all of us were secluded in the house, isolated, and testosterone running through that poor kid's body. And he's doing great now, but like, you know, we lived in Connecticut at the time on the outskirts of New York City. And I remember like almost daily we turn on the news and like star football player commits suicide, cheerleader commits suicide. I'm like, what the fuck is going on in this world? So that's another application we eventually want to get to, is like, how do we help these adolescents understand the highs and lows that we all go through and empower them with solutions. But those are the heart rate variability, sleep, and then activity. But then we also had with those doctors, we pulled some questions together. So there is a questionnaire component to this. In time, we don't need it. Like that, we'll have enough data to know like the questions, we just won't need them in the algorithm. But we will most likely keep them because we want to understand how people perceive themselves to be. Mm-hmm. And then also like we have a tendency to lie, right? So we also want to capture that. Like when you're doing, that's data that's really interesting too. Are you lying? Like we can tell when people lie on this thing too. It's like we look at biometrics and then we look at your responses on here. It's like, and there's three questions initially. You can add up to three more, like libido and some others, like work stress and stuff like that. But it was initially pulled from PHQ-9, GAD-7 initially, and then the doctors that we talked about, Chris Fee and Kaufman, kind of molded this more into what we're trying to solve, and that's your mental well-being. So I have six questions every morning. I just kind of, it's a little haptic. You kind of play with the dot. You drop it on a 1 to 5 scale, and you just kind of say, hey, where are you at today? In combination with the biometrics, it gives you your mind score. So that's the secret sausage, man.
So you alluded to something there. You mentioned your son during COVID. You mentioned like what college kids and high school kids and things like that were going through. And I was thinking about it because like on your website, you have the quote, the current tools are falling short. The current system is failing. Is there a way bigger conversation here beyond veterans about like the way the system is failing in terms of like, we keep doubling down on things that like are not actually getting us closer to where we want to be, right? Like we're cutting physical education, we're cutting recess, we're cutting time outdoors, like all these things that we know are foundational, and we're just continuing to ignore the problem that it's creating. Cause like, I'm not like on the conspiracy theory end of this spectrum, but I do think that society is stuck on whatever topic like sells well on the media and is not doing a good job of having the important conversations that don't necessarily sell well on the media, like the mental health of our kids and our young adults, and the fact that that is so closely tied to physical activity, access to nature, access to good food, all these kinds of just lifestyle things.
Yeah. I love how you think, man. You go to the root cause. You're just like, hey, F all this. Stop wasting your time over here. Let's just go to the root cause. Man, again, like spot on. There is a bigger conversation to be had. There is a massive system that a lot of people get paid a lot of money to be a part of. And there's a huge, huge target on your back when you start saying things like I say on the website. You know, I know I'm going to create enemies, but I also know like it's cited in truth. I've lost a lot of friends. I've personally suffered from that. I've seen others suffer from it. My family members, my son, are there great things that do come out of that system? Absolutely, for sure. But when it comes to mental health, man, it feels like we're in the Stone Ages here. Like, how are we still sitting on a couch, laying down, talking to a therapist, and not even taking our fucking blood pressure? Like, at a minute, like, where? It just blows my mind. So yes, 100%, there's a bigger conversation to have. Part of the thinking around, you know, I just spent my whole last 5 years has been immersed in the tech, so everything comes back to Envy, but I mentioned at the nonprofit through Whoop, that's what we initially used. So it was like, we could quickly tell what was working for people and what wasn't. Guys, what wasn't working for majority of the people was fucking SSRIs. So like part of the thinking here is like, hey, let's get this right. Let's go back to human connection. Let's show the world through measuring, through data, like, hey, this is what works for you. And you know what works best than anything else, guys? Take a guess.
Anything. The things that are coming to mind are like social activity.
I was going to say social and exercise.
Sleep, time outside. Yeah.
Time outside. It's nature, guys.
Yeah.
Stepping outside and going for a walk. It's not mindfulness. It's stepping outside and going. It's like sitting in the trees, going for a walk, going for a hike is what impacts your mental well-being most positively over anything else. Drugs, prescriptions, talk therapy, even working out. So again, like, with enough time and data, enough people on this platform, and everybody, please, like, bear with us. We're young. We're going to figure it out. We're going to get investments. We'll build this thing with your, like, with your guidance, but we're going to figure out this topic. So download it. If you have the opportunity, it's in the App Store, Envy Mind Health, but allow us to build this alongside you. But we're going to point out what's working and what's not. And again, like, the one thing that is super evident that isn't working is a lot of these prescription drugs. And again, like, throw the big target on our backs, but we're just kind of showing the data here. That's all we're doing. We're not saying, and in some scenarios it does work. So let me be crystal clear about that, right? Like, some of these antidepressants, SSRIs, do help people. But from what we've seen, the questionnaires, the data, the biometric feedback, it seems like there's other solutions.
You can't monetize time outside the same way you can monetize, you know.
Well, they'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. They always do.
So I got to share another anecdote, and again, it's one I got to keep anonymous, but I had a meeting with a leader at work a few weeks ago, and it was supposed to be about like developing human performance programs for their command, like what classes do you need, what programs do you need, all that kind of stuff. But this particular leader, sitting at their desk on a normal work day, not doing anything in particular other than like having a conversation and seeing emails ping up on the monitor, was sitting at a heart rate of over 100, sometimes 110. Wow. And so like pretty quickly, the conversation pivoted from what programs does the unit need around like strength and conditioning to a conversation about just stress management kind of stuff. And so halfway through the meeting, I just proposed like, why don't we take this for a walk outside and just chat? And their heart rate dropped like 30, 40 beats.
Insane.
Just like we stopped talking about super work specific stuff. We just talked about like, hey, where'd you come from? What do you do? Why do you do this kind of work? And we got out in the sun and like nothing special, nothing high tech, nothing in the gym.
Yeah.
Just like getting real about what people actually need. And sometimes what they need is not that complicated or sexy. It's just the basics.
Yeah. It's movement, right? It's good nutrition. It's sunlight, get some vitamin D, Breathe some fresh air.
There's something sexy about getting tan, though, if you think about it. You know, I mean,
no, obviously, nobody's wouldn't discount it, but too obviously much. I've been working on my tan, guys. Like
every Navy SEAL you've had on has been dashingly handsome with great skin and hair. I don't know why that happens.
Part of the selection process.
Yeah, I guess that is true. So, I mean, as we work towards a close here, I do want to give you a chance to highlight. You mentioned the Monster Mash, and we touched on it, and then I think we went down a much more important rabbit hole. Just the physical task that you guys are going after, how can people, well, I mean, one, we mentioned what it is, but if there's anything else you want to dive into with that, and then two, more importantly, how can people find out more and contribute and become part of that mission?
Yeah. Well, I'll start with that so I don't forget it. You can go to invimh.com, and that stands for invimindhealth.com. You got a little cheeseburger, the three bars. You click on that, and you'll see Monster Mash. If you click on that, you'll see how to get involved. We're going to have a big party. I had a conversation with Zach Brownband's CEO, and no promises there, but we're trying to get those guys up there. And bottom line is, we're gonna do something super challenging because we can, right? And if we can suffer for a bit and raise a lot of money for those that can't support themselves, for those that are just too banged up or have gone through too much, but and don't have the access, don't have the tools, don't have the appropriate resources, if that's the least we can do, then we'll do it. The training, yeah, the training is something else. I'm grateful for everybody that's gotten involved with that. We have some great sponsors. Just so many people have, like, Therabody, Exos is a group that's supported us as well. Obviously, you guys. We have some of the best ultra marathon runners. And oh, by the way, we're not ultra marathon runners, although we're looking like it more recently. But just so much respect for that community. And then truly understanding, like, the mentality of the warrior, like specifically this demographic of teen guys, and our inability to not compete has been really challenging for this group, right? So, like, I was down in Florida. I flew down there with one of the other guys, and we did a 20-mile run. And it's supposed to be a zone two run. That fucking thing was not a zone two run because of our egos. And it started slowly creeping up. And the next thing you know, we're not doing like the 12, 13 minute miles or whatever it's supposed to be, which is really hard to do, by the way. But once you get there, it's just like you can go forever, as you both know. But now we're out like an all out, like I'm looking at my watch and we're like 8 minutes, 7 minutes on some of the miles. I'm like, so discipline is going to be super important for this race because we're not running 200 miles coming out of the gates at 7 minutes. We got to be super disciplined. We got a great team supporting us. We're going to have pacers out there. They're going to pace us out at the zone two pace. We're going to go to the lowest common denominator, and we're going to get after it. We have aid stations, nutrition, as you know. I just didn't realize how important that is. Morton's is awesome. Great nutrition supplements. And then just really kind of dialing in our nutrition so we can put these long hauls in. And for us, it's mostly a lot of stretching. We're still doing some strength and conditioning, more light weights, more band works, and then just kind of stretching out and then doing a lot of recovery too. And we're not the young spring chickens we used to be. Yeah, those days of just like going to bed and not stretching out or waking up and not stretching out are long gone. Like I'm in an ice bath, hot tub, Theragun, like rolling like hours a day.
Is there, having never swam 10 miles, well, quite frankly, having never jumped out of a plane, but then more importantly, swam 10 miles and then run for 200, what kind of time are you guys looking at for this?
Well, it's interesting because it's 45 degree water, right? So Xterra wetsuits sponsored us, but it's like 80 degrees today in Colorado. Like guys are swimming in pools. Mm-hmm. There is no 45 degree water anywhere. So like we're not going to feel 45 degree water until probably like a couple weeks out at best, and maybe even day of, which means how do you swim in this wetsuit, this thick ass wetsuit? You can't in a pool. You can in these, like we got guys in San Diego, we got guys in Florida. So we're trying to like navigate that too. Is like train as you fight as you train, but we don't have the opportunity to do that right now. So the first time we might get in these wetsuits is day of.
Like, oh man.
We'll probably do it a few weeks before that just to kind of swim in the pool and get used to them and kind of see where the chafing areas are. But like putting long distance, we can't do that in a pool, you know, in September. So yeah, so that's, I don't quite know. Like we're, you know, we know how long, what the expectation is. We know what our pace count is. We're kind of, again, going to the lowest common denominator. We factor it'll take us 4 days and four nights nonstop to do this whole thing. And that's if everything goes as planned.
Listeners cannot see Drew's face.
I'm like, you just sort of casually mentioned 4 days, four nights nonstop. It's like, okay, the number of variables that I'm having to consider, like, yeah, that's insane. How do you, I mean, not to create a whole nother podcast here on like training, but I'm curious, overnight is one thing, two nights is another thing, four nights is entirely different. In the training process, have you guys attempted to replicate that in some sense, as far as like, hey, you know, this weekend we're going to do a 2 day push and you're not going to sleep?
Yeah, we are going to have one run here in the next couple of weeks that simulates that, because there are a few guys, like the hockey player's never done anything like this, right?
I was going to say.
One of the ultra marathoners, I don't know if you guys know a guy named Pops. I don't even know his, let me see if I can find his name for you, but he's just like, he's a guy from Texas, and just we're getting super disciplined, like we think we should. And he's like, nah, you don't need that shit. Just like,
dude, I was just going to say,
a sandwich.
If there is an ultra runner, and I don't know a ton about that community, but I know enough, and people only know him as Pops, he's probably an absolute maniac and would say exactly that. No, you don't need to train, dude. Just grab a peanut butter and jelly and head out there, brother.
I've been awake for 3 days before, and it gets pretty running? Rowdy, and I was not running. I was definitely not running the whole time.
Oh, yeah, man. He's interesting. So he sends a foot. He did at mile 60, he did a 100-miler, and he's old now. So extortion happened, and he runs 31 miles. Is it 31 or 30? Yeah, 31 miles a day that month, every single day for extortion.
Jeez.
And then he's just talking on the thread nonchalant. It's like, oh yeah, I like lost half my feel on a heel on one of the runs, say like mile 60, but you got to keep going. It's just the mentality. And we're just like, yeah, okay, cool. And at the end, I was like, Pops, what does it mean to like lose half a heel? And he sends us the picture, and no shit, he lost half his heel. Like half the heel was gone. So
wait, the heel of his shoe or the heel of his body?
His foot. I think he got some moisture, and like the heel is just gone. And so Daniel Carcillo, who's his hockey player,
it's like, oh shit,
they call him Car Bomb. So like, he was somewhat of an enforcer, 2-time Stanley Cup winner. Like, he's a hard dude. He sees this after that call. He sees that photo. He calls me. He's like, dude, I ain't doing this shit. I got four kids in the house, like under 10. I'm like, so that's
meanwhile, Pops is running on his tiptoes for 60 miles.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I think to your point, Alex, is like, it's going to get gnarly. You start seeing things.
You really do.
Yeah. You just, I remember in Hell Week, you see, like, I saw a wall, a chain link fence as we were paddling around the world in Coronado, and there's no chain link fence in the middle of the ocean. But I swear to God, that chain link fence was there, and you see people popping up, and you're just like, hey, pass me. Like, I remember sitting in the boat crew, and like, people were like talking to like things in the water. I was like, who are you talking to? It's like, right there. You don't see that guy? I'm like, what the fuck? No, I don't see that guy. Yeah, Pops. it's going to get gnarly. And I think like the witching hour is like usually 2 to 5 a.m. And that's where hopefully we'll just have everything contained, and we just keep moving positive direction. And then once the sun comes up, I think we'll be in the okay.
You're not going to need psychedelics anymore after like day two or three.
Yeah. No kidding, man.
Well, yeah. One more question on this, and then we'll bring it to a close. But I mean, you know, you mentioned guys sitting in a room, the numbers get elevated. Like, you've set the bar here, but I mean, this is not going to be the end. Have conversations started about next time we're going to run around the world? Like, what is, where do you go next?
Well, part of this, selfishly, if I'm going to be honest, is like, there's a lot of these guys that are now retired or out, we haven't challenged ourselves in a while. Right. And that's like part of our DNA for so long. And I think a lot of the suffering that we go through is not putting ourselves through the crucible. Right. So you have this group of people that are super talented, super smart, got degrees from all over, working at awesome businesses, finding success. And at the same time, like, they're sitting around like depressed, like, my life's over. Like I hit pinnacle. Fuck that. No. Like, so we're going to do something. And I don't know what's going to come of it, man. I promise you the next one's going to be harder. And yes, there's already talks about it. And you know what I found interesting is like, not just veterans, but once the word started getting out about this race, civilians, random people were reaching out and say, hey, can I run this with you guys? Like, it blew my mind. We probably had 50, 60 people reach out and say, hey, can we run this with you? And we initially only had 3 people running this. So we've expanded it to 9. And my buddy was like, my business partner, who's a civilian, he's running it. His name is James Smith. I met him at Oxford. He's like, Johnny, he's the brains and like the compliance behind us. Is like, dude, there's liability. We can't have more than 3 people. And now we got 9. So when I said 50, he's like, dude, there's no way. Maybe next year, but too many liabilities with that.
Yeah.
I guess it's going to grow, man. It's Drew, it's going to be something different. We don't know what it is. And we're talking to the Explorers Club, which is if you two are familiar with the Explorers Club, they started in 1903, North Pole, South Pole, Marianas Trench, space. They got 4,000 members. They just go to the, they just keep exploring. And we're partnering with them around how to explore kind of the mind, if you will, and see how far we can push that. So we're talking to them about doing something, a documentary for next year.
So I know Drew's trying to wrap this thing up, bring it to a close, and I'll let him in a second. But you talked about people reaching out when they heard about this thing and like seeking that crucible experience. And we don't really have time to go down this rabbit hole. We've already gone over on our time, I think. But I think that's central to some of this conversation about mental health and suicide a little bit, is that like people weren't meant for comfortable lives. People were meant for like being up against challenges all the time. And I think as we engineer a world that is like safe and comfortable and stuff, I think people start to not realize what they're missing, and there's supposed to be suffering in there. And I think that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah. Yes. Again. Sorry to drag this out. I'll just reinforce that. It's like, I literally just had this conversation because, you know, I've again been blessed to be successful. I've had credentials. Doors have been opened because of the SEALs. I've made wealth. You know, we have a massive family here and we're blessed to have this farm. And I dropped everything because I believe in what we're doing at NB Mind Health. I went all in on that. And here we find ourselves for the first time in a very long time in a corner. And I haven't felt this before. Financial pressures, right? Like if I'm being honest, like raising money for a business and having people working for me that I have to pay for, like we have to put food on their tables, right? And personally too, it's like, holy shit. And I talked to my buddy about the other day. He's like, how are you doing? I was like, dude, I feel like I can't even tell you how alive I feel right now. I'm in my happy place. As crazy as that sounds, it doesn't sound crazy at all. It's because of what Alex just said. Is like, we're meant to challenge ourselves. We're meant to be out of this uncomfortable, in this uncomfortable place. That's where we grow. That's where we, you know, peak, you know, where we find new peaks. And when we're part of the society where everything's just manufactured, like you said so well, Alex, is like we get super comfortable. And when a recession hits, or when interest rates rise, or when inflation happens, and when people start losing their jobs, they start, you know, unfortunately hurting themselves. They start finding themselves, they don't know how to navigate this anymore. So well said again, and super spot on, Alex.
Well, I know, again, like we'll close this here because I feel like we could go for hours, but I do want to ask publicly, after you guys do this, I want to bring you back on and debrief and figure out how it went, because I am so curious to see how 10-mile swim into a 200-mile run goes. And I think there's going to be some awesome lessons learned.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. Thanks for the opportunity, guys.
Of course.
We'd love to come back too. It'd be freaking fun to talk about the Crucible and how bad it sucked. And it's going to suck, but there's going to be some great that comes out of it. And again, if anybody wants to support INVIMH.com, Monster Mash, and then you can go to the App Store too and download that puppy and send us feedback. Tell us it sucks and why it sucks, more importantly, so we can fix it.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Cool.
Hey, Alex, let's cover our ass real quick.
Oh, great idea, Drew. All right, guys. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Before you go, please rate and review the pod on the listening platform of your choice. You can also visit us on our website at www.mopsinmos.com. That's mops, the letter N, mos.com. You can check out the library of podcast episodes, our latest blog entries, any helpful resources, and also sign up for our newsletter.
Drew nailed it. Just to underline a couple of things, the podcast entries have in-depth show notes on the website. So if you missed anything or you want to read any of the research we talk about, it is all there. You can, at the bottom of the website, sign up with your email and receive future updates from us. The blog posts go a little bit more in-depth in kind of written form on a couple of topics we get questions about all the time. But most importantly, I just want to ask all you guys, our best way the word gets out is absolutely word of mouth. So tell your friends, tell the people you work with, anybody you think would find it useful. Thanks for spreading the word.
If you have any questions or comments, feel free to shoot us an email at either Drew or Alex at mopsandmos.com.
Or there's a contact form on the website.
Thank you.